Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning to Dr. Bryce Edwards from Victoria University.
Morena, Johnny.
Now, a little bit later than usual, but there's some pretty, you know, topical stuff for us to cover off this morning. We're going to start with the national government is proposing a ban or bill to ban teenagers from under 16 using social media, following a similar move by Australia. I guess the proposal is driven by concerns over the negative impacts of social media on mental health, including issues like bullying, body image, and addiction. What are your thoughts on the proposal to restrict social media access for those under 16? Do you think it's an effective solution, or could it be overly simplistic?
Well, yeah, I think it's definitely overly simplistic. It's tapping into a concern that's happening throughout the world at the moment about social media and technology. And I think across the political spectrum, you know, there's an agreement that there is a problem. And so, yeah, everyone in the New Zealand Parliament from ACT to the Greens do think that this is something that needs action. It's just a question of how you do it. And, you know, everyone's grappling around the world with solutions. So, yes, National MP Catherine Webb has introduced, she's announced the Social Media Age Appropriate Users Bill, so it's very similar to what they're trying to do in Australia. If you're under 16, you have limitations on what social media platforms you can use. There's just big questions about whether this is actually going to be effective, the ethics of it, and you've got some criticisms of it, I guess, from both left and right, essentially. So you've got people like David Seymour and the ACT Party, they don't agree with this. And that's essentially why it's not a government bill. That's why it's just a National MP doing this, because ACT have essentially vetoed the government from introducing this. So Seymour says, well, this is a bit of a populist sort of knee-jerk reaction, and he doesn't think it's going to work. Whereas people on the left, the Greens are also kind of questioning whether it's an appropriate thing to do with kids. No, because social media, yes, it has some harms, but it also has some good and some, you know, and some human rights to be able to connect with, you know, fellow citizens.
Alex Casey from The Spin-Off argued that social media restrictions should extend beyond under 16s to adults, particularly those susceptible to misinformation in the 65 plus age groups.
Yeah.
Do you think this approach has merit, or do you think the government should take stronger measures to regulate social media usage for all age groups?
Yeah, look, I mean, Alex Casey's point, I think, is a good one. I think she's being a bit tongue-in-cheek,
yes,
saying that it's not just young people. I don't think she really wants old people to be banned from social media, but she's trying to get across the point that, yeah, maybe the solution lies across the board. And, look, I think she's generally right, but what that looks like, no one knows at this stage.
Mm.
I mean, there are some big issues here, because governments do like, and authoritarians do like, to intervene on what media can do, and you always have to be careful that you're not handing the state so much power that they can kind of do it for their own means. I mean, obviously in China you have all sorts of bans on social media, and you don't have certain platforms allowed in the country like Facebook or etc. So you want to be careful. I think this is an area that you do need a lot of nuance and thought, and it's a really important topic, but let's be careful not to come up with simplistic solutions.
Mm. Now, last week we had a bit of a surprise. There was a surprise pay equity law change. National and ACT have backed a massive overhaul of pay equity law that would see existing pay equity claims scrapped and raise the threshold for bringing in new ones, affecting about 150,000 people in industries that are largely dominated by women, teaching, childcare, elder care, cleaning, etc. The law was introduced and passed in one day under urgency, skipping the usual select committee and public consultation stages. How does the fast tracking of these changes reflect on the government's commitment to transparency and consultation?
Oh, look, it reflects very poorly. I mean, all governments have the ability to, you know, fast track and use urgency to get legislation quickly through Parliament when they need to, and it's normally or classically used for, you know, natural disasters, you know, wars, emergencies, and they've got to have that ability to do that. But we're seeing governments use it more and more, and quite recklessly, in my view. It's not just National; it's the last government. Just when it suits their own purposes, it means that they can skip some of the processes in the legislation process, especially the select committee process, which allows the public to kind of, you know, have an input into changes. And so, yeah, I think it was pretty cynical on the government's part to do this so quickly. They announced it out of the blue last week on Tuesday. It was passed into law by Wednesday night, and yeah, I think it's to be condemned. I mean, that's not to say that what they're trying to do is necessarily right or wrong. It's just the misuse of urgency. But I mean, I think we should talk briefly about, you know, what they're trying to do, because it's a classic sort of left-right issue about whether you intervene and help those at the more marginalised, lower socioeconomic end of the job market. And so that's what the pay equity bill has, you know, that Labor brought in, tried to do, essentially. It tried to fix some historical problems where, you know, some industries have been dominated by women, and arguably, well, they have been low paid because of that, and this bill has tried to fix that. National now says that the bill has become too expensive, too unwieldy, and it's kind of ended up not working how they thought it was going to be, so they have scaled it back. So yeah, a classic left-right situation. How much do you try to put billions of dollars into low-paid workers' hands?
I reckon it needs to be put in context of the tax cuts for tobacco companies and the tax cuts for landlords. I mean, to what extent does this move reflect the government's broader fiscal strategy?
Oh, look, I think that's absolutely right. Any government can pay for this if they really want to. This government says they're running out of money, and this is going to be more expensive than they thought, and they're having a huge problem balancing the budget, partly because of those tax cuts they gave, and really they need to either prioritise this over other spending allocations, or raise taxes, etc. But I think they think that most New Zealanders, or at least their voting base, would rather see them trim this than raise taxes.
Oh, man. Do you see any risk of public backlash, especially amongst those working in the care sectors, education sectors, and how's it going to affect the government standing?
Look, absolutely. We've seen a huge backlash over the last week, and I think the government's been caught out with that backlash being bigger than it expected, and so it's become a real rallying cause for those, on the left, in the union movement, feminists, and so... And I don't think the government have really won that debate. I think that they haven't even put forward very good arguments, or not very well-crafted ones anyhow. So they look like they're just bulldozing it for their own need to balance that budget. And we will see. I think this will have a resonance going right into election year on this, but most of the people that that National have alienated on this will probably tend to be already opponents, people voting for Labor, Greens, Te Pāti Māori, etc.
Now, on the backlash, the Sunday Star Times published an article criticising Brooke Van Velden. In Parliament the other day, Van Velden has decided to use... there was a C word in the article, and... Van Velden has used it in Parliament, even in quotation. How do you think this has gone down? And is this unprecedented? Is this signalling... What does this signal about the current tone of political discourse in New Zealand?
Ab- it's quite unprecedented what's happened here. So, I mean, it goes back to the Sunday Star Times. Their national correspondent, Andrea Vance, wrote a column about the Paiukati. She, she kind of pushed the envelope quite a lot by calling Nicola Willis the C word. In the column, she didn't use it fully spelled out. It was like C dash dash dash. And so people have been quite shocked by this, and it is very unusual to have a senior journalist be so aggressive towards a national minister in such a sort of gendered, quite quite full-on way. And so Jan Tinetti, the Labour MP, raised this column in Parliament yesterday, and then Brooke Van Belden, the ex-cabinet minister, then repeated the word in Parliament and pushed it back at Labour, saying, oh, why haven't you condemned this, essentially? No, this is quite an abusive, sort of gendered, misogynist sort of thing for a journalist to throw at at a politician. And so, yeah, I don't know what you'd do in Parliament, but she used the C word in full, and so that has caused some major sort of headlines, really. And we're not really used to having these swear words used in newspapers or in Parliament. And of course, it kind of comes at a time when people are particularly sensitive about rising kind of polarization, toxicity, and threats against politicians. So yeah, there's a bit of debate about whether this has crossed the line or not.
How might this moment affect the public perception of both the coalition government and the Labour opposition, especially in the context of the ongoing pay equity debate?
Well, I think it's been very useful for the government parties, because it's kind of given them a distraction, because, as I've suggested, I think they're on quite weak ground on the pay equity issue, and it's been unpopular, but this has given them a bit of a victim status, if you like, and they have, I think, put up some quite legitimate complaints about this, that the left essentially are using the C word too freely about government ministers in a way that's bad for gender, bad for toxicity, and that, a lot of people on the left, and journalists and the media complain about female politicians being abused, threatened, patronised, etc. And here we have it being used by a senior journalist. It does seem to play into national and axe hands, I think. But I'll just quickly also mention that it's all a bit silly in some ways. And, I think there's a bit of room in politics to use some swear words. And it should be noted that the journalist herself, Andrea Vance, is actually from Northern Ireland. And so in the British Isles, the C word is used much more freely in public life and even in the media over there. So I think you have to sort of see that as part of the context of what's happened here.
All right. Hey, Dr. Bryce Edwards, thank you so much for the political commentary this morning. We'll check in with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks, Johnny.
Cheers, dude. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.